Go into AI because you, if you want to do AI now because it's so saturated, do it because you love it and you're really, really smart and you're good at it. Because if you love it and you can't handle the technical and intellectual rigor because you are literally building a form of intelligence, you will quickly hit burnout. If you were somebody like me that like thrives on that intellectual complexity, do it because you love it and not because it's going to make money.
Today, I'm joined on the Data Bytes podcast with Erica Luna Lee, who is a technical investor, leader, and humanitarian. She has an amazing background, having worked in three public tech companies and also founded two startups. She was recently the VP at Upwork, director at Zillow, and also a manager at Apple. In addition, she is also the founder of Women of AI and is an AI influencer. So, Erica, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today. So, I always love talking to people who have been in this space for quite some time because their journey of how they got into it is typically a winding road. So, tell me a little bit more of how did you get started in the AI space?
Thanks, Sadie, for having me. Really excited to be here. Believe it or not, AI actually found me. Before AI was trending and had a lot of mass spotlight, first there was, the DeepMind acquisition that I think brought a lot of Silicon Valley's awareness on AI, and then recently OpenAI with ChatGPT, which kind of brought the whole world awareness. I was actually doing research at Harvard where they were predicting how stem cells might grow into cancer cells, a process called metastasis. And they were actually using kind of statistical mining and traditional machine learning methods. So I was exposed to it there. And then I eventually, moved from research into tech in the private sector. And when I entered, I basically realized, who you spend your time with in your community will really dictate a lot of your career. So I actually moved on my own to Silicon Valley. I moved into the heart of Mountain View and kind of lived in a room within a room of like other people that worked in tech. And a lot of like the tech talks and billboards and people's companies and projects were mostly into big data. I think this was around 2014, 2015. And there were some AI. And for me, I really like to work on the wave that's rising, not necessarily the wave that's already risen. So I actually just decided to go all in into AI and, take several educational courses, work in a few companies, and also start my own company in the space. So a lot of it was me actually listening to what the world was working on and getting involved probably earlier than other people did.
Yeah, your story reminds me a lot of another podcast I interviewed, Gianluca. He came from Europe and spent some time in San Francisco and had a similar experience where it's like, all these billboards are talking about AI and technology and nowhere else in the country. I think that's what makes like Silicon Valley and the Bay Area so special is just always how forward thinking they are on technology and how much of an influence it can have on people who move there or live there. But I also want to acknowledge that the specific actions you took, which were first identifying your community is really important and who you surround yourself by. And second, being a person who's willing to take that risk and ride that wave, as you so rightfully mentioned, the one that's not here yet, but the one that's coming. How did you come to this realization that who you spend your time with and surround yourself with is essential in your career? Was there a pivotal moment where it was like, aha, that you realize, okay, I need to take this seriously?
Good question. So for me, part of it was common sense. So you know how they have the theory, like the roommate effect, which is there's two people together, whoever has the dominant energy will influence the other person. So if one person's like a very athletic and into fitness, they could get the other person a lot healthier. Or if one person is heavy into drugs and alcohol and negative, unhealthy eating, they could maybe turn the athlete into an unhealthy person. So it's always like whatever the stronger energy will drive the conversion of the other. So for me, I said, if I am not surrounded by other people that are technical and they're developers and they're builders, I really see Silicon Valley as like the builder economy, where they actually value merit more than your background. So in a lot of the world, there's judgment about like your family name or how much money you have or the way you look. Silicon Valley really seemed, at least at the time, to judge people by merit, like how smart are you and what can you build? And they actually had a culture of promoting people that didn't go to college or people that like hacked things together by themselves or open sourced things. And I really appreciated that merit was a reputational driver. So I realized, I had been living in San Diego and I had also lived in Baltimore and other cities. And I wasn't able to get the same kind of immersion of technical knowledge. So moving to the Valley, they had so many free events, dinners, friends, social activities that it's kind of like when you have atoms in a container, if you heat them up, they start bouncing around faster. I was like, if you want serendipity to happen, you need to be at the like the center of like the rave. You need to be at the center of the party. And that's where a lot of opportunities in tech happened for me. I really don't think I would have made it this far in AI if I had done it in any other city besides Silicon Valley.
You are no longer living in Silicon Valley, correct? I think you're in Southern California now today. What advice do you have for people who maybe they can't move to like a central hub, right? They either have family or some roots that are leaving them tied where they are. Are there ways to still have that atoms in a jar effect without having to physically be there?
Yes. So ever since COVID happened, and I think people started to reevaluate that work could be successful remotely, especially people that have computer dominant jobs, I think the location is less important post-COVID. Before COVID, it would be hard to evaluate. There are so many online communities such as like Women in Data, womenofai.org, which is, we've done online events, but I really do think the in-person ones are a bit more different. And there's Coursera and MIT and Stanford that have free online courses, and a lot of these you can get certificates from at low cost or even like sponsored for free. So I do think people can get involved remotely. And my recommendation would be if you're going to be remote, your local community, as long as they're personally supportive of your career or your advancement and knowledge, that's important. Because at the end of the day, you can be involved remotely, but if your family or friends think it's either a bad idea or they spend all their time dissuading you, it's not gonna, it's like trying to bike and then people keep throwing mud in front of your tires, right? So I really think, the people you surround yourself in your personal life really do influence a lot about the trajectory of your professional career.
Yeah, that's such a great way of looking at it. Not so much of even just where you live, but who are you surrounding yourself? Are you surrounding yourself with supportive people? And I love what you mentioned before regarding the dominant energy of taking a step back and saying, what is the dominant energy in my life? And also, I think just a lot of self-awareness too, right? Are you that person who brings the dominant energy to the room and can convert that other person? Or are you in rooms where there's a dominant energy influencing you? So I think those are some really great tips for individuals. I'd love to dive into your experience, though, as a VP and director leading AI and machine learning teams. For many women, we know it's difficult to move into those leadership positions. Can you give us some tips or best practices for how you moved into those positions and how do you go from maybe middle management to really that senior or C-suite level?
It's a tricky question to be honest, since a lot of women actually want to be in upper management, but as a woman that's worked there, I can say it's probably been some of the most unpleasant times in my career. A lot of it is when you're the one of your own, like, you're kind of put on a pedestal as like the only female VP or something. People hold you on to double standards, whether it's if you make one small mistake, it's kind of blown up, or if, you're trying to play nice and like get everyone to agree, they ask, why aren't you innovating or like creating change? So it's really hard to appeal to what people want. So the most important thing for me has always been not picking a job, but really picking a manager. Because ultimately, a manager's job is to protect their subordinates or directs. And I can usually tell if there's a good manager in the interviewing process about who they staff on the panel, which it should usually be the people you'll work with most day to day, since you have synergy and understanding. And also with a manager that trusts you and they already respect your background, and they're gonna willing to give you the freedom and space to do things that are different in the company, because ultimately they're bringing you in to change some things that are important. So, I've had to go through, several reorgs, both being part of them and having to, host them myself. I've had to let people go. That was very difficult. It's a hard job. I got, pretty sick from working in those jobs, to be honest. I developed like I think there was like a few years ago, there was this kind of awareness of like Hashimoto's, right, which is low thyroid. So I got really bad Hashimoto's, and I got really bad acne, and kind of all these like health symptoms started coming out of my life. And I've been able to naturally cure them because a lot of it is I change who I spend my time with, and I also change my belief in what my job is. So for me now, working in a high level role really is a job that I get to serve, but it's not my entire life. It's not my identity. It's not my confidence. It's not where I find all the joy in my life. And before, it used to really be the only thing in my life, especially in my 20s, because I didn't have, anchors of an inspiration in my life. So now I actually have many hobbies, and I have friends that I spend time with, and with more family, and it's been able to kind of separate my identity from just my job.
I think that's so important and also valuable for everyone to hear too, that when we each go through this journey and have to find ways to balance it. And one thing I'll say is, I think more and more people are waking up to this idea that our job isn't our full identity and are seeing the harms of what happens when we do make that our full identity, particularly this year in 2024. I've had so many female executives come and talk to me, telling me they're burnt out, they're taking sabbaticals, they want to quit, they don't know what to do. And part of me wonders, is this also exaggerated for females in those executive leadership roles? And you mentioned something regarding, being the only one in the room. There's a lot of extra pressure on individuals. Do you have any ideas in terms of ways we can mitigate that extra stress, particularly for female executives?
One is for those females to bond and see each other as allies. I think a lot of them already are mature enough, and it's not like a competition, but they are close peers. And I think the second is for, at least for me, my awakening is that, I'll never have more job security and success than probably running another one of my own companies. At the end of the day, when my teams and my managers and other people around me, they generally have an agenda to want to get me out of the company or don't feel like I deserve the role there. That makes it harder to get things done. Women in tech at least don't have as much opportunity and privilege. And I think women have been doing their best to, get those roles. And it's going to take a lot longer than people think. It's not just a few years of change. I think, women are finding success in other industries as well. And I think the more empowerment we see kind of on a global scale, we'll start to see some balance. But, it's a hard thing because, I don't think it's a coincidence, but like when COVID hit, and then, also like the recent layoffs of kind of just like the real estate market and everything, and the interest rates rising. A lot of female executives that I know, because I hosted a Woman of AI event at NASDAQ, a large percentage of them were basically forced out of their jobs or resigned. And, most of my male peers in similar roles were all still mostly working. I know a small handful of men that are on sabbatical or unemployed, but I know at least 10x more that are women. And I don't, I don't have a proof or evidence of the cause and effect of that, but I also don't think it's like a pure coincidence. So it's hard for women to be in AI, but I also think they can influence the world by doing jobs just outside of tech as well. I think women could be extraordinarily successful at health and wellness. I think they'd be extraordinarily successful at, you know, exploring international markets as well. And, you know, you can think about like a businesswoman like Jessica Alba. She actually worked with a tech entrepreneur. I'm forgetting where he came from. I think he came from LegalZoom or something. And then she also worked with like a scientist that started Prima, the CBDs, and they started the Honest Company. So if you actually get people from different parts of the world, you know, they ended up starting a company that was all about non-toxic household cleaning agents and eventually non-toxic baby products and more. And they really changed the entire world and landscape about household toxicity. And I feel like that is such a huge change that you can have outside of just being working in tech and maybe changing a software or changing an application. So for me, change is really more than just tech. Tech is such a big connector of people, but I really try to encourage people to use tech as a means to an end, right? You can make business operation costs a lot cheaper, and you can hire talent remotely using technology. But I really believe like women entrepreneurs is really the biggest movement that will be coming in the next decade.
I think you're spot on with that. And I'm really excited about this because I think it's one of the biggest areas that we can start to change things, right? Sometimes we can see more change, not changing the existing system, but creating a new system, right? And I think that is the path forward. You have founded two different companies. What advice do you have for people who are on the fence of being a female founder or thinking about going and starting their next venture?
You know, make sure you have your supporters. So, you know, behind a lot of successful women, there's usually a best friend or a partner that was like an emotional support structure. And there was usually like a financial sponsor, whether it was a family friend, their husband, you know, it was somebody that they knew that gave them the initial support and protection to run the company. And, you know, I've been researching a lot of female entrepreneurs that have done large exits, and they all had usually two of those to keep them grounded. Otherwise, I feel like if you don't have the protection emotionally and financially, you put yourself at a lot of business risk. So I always say behind every great woman is a great man, and behind every great man is also a great woman. Yeah, they might not make it into the documentation, but you know, if you listen to smaller podcasts of people's stories, they usually talk about, you know, a brother-in-law or, you know, their husband or something, right?
Yes, for me personally, my husband has been that for me. We even have a chair that is typically our dog's chair. It's a blue chair, but we call it our therapy chair. And it's just like anytime I'm stressed out with, you know, like all the things that are, we've all seen the entrepreneur's journey of the highs and lows, right? It's like, do you need to sit in the therapy chair? And I'm like, yes, I do. And it's just kind of our signal for like, hey, I just need you to listen and hear me out, and it's probably all going to be fine. But just as you mentioned, that emotional support, particularly on a founder's journey, is so key to be able to pick yourself up and keep going again.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't publicly recognize their support system on both genders. And it would be great if, you know, there was more media about those supporters and that they play an equally valuable, important role. Like, I genuinely do believe that Jeff Bezos' company was as successful as it was because of his family and Mackenzie involved in his life. I believe they've met at work. I think they were both working together at an iBank, or they met in some situation, but she was very smart. And if you read his book, The Everything Store, like, they moved to Seattle together and got out of New York because both tax reasons and a way to get away from finance and to think about the future of e-commerce. And, you know, she basically was by his side for 30 years and, you know, one of the largest companies in the world. So it'd be great if there was more recognition around the supporters in the world, because not everybody will be the leader, but every leader is successful. It's like the Robin, right? The Batman, the Robin. Like, we need more stories of the Robins. Like, I've been people's Robins, and then maybe I'll be a Batman day, but I was like, Robins are very critical to the world, and it should be something that's exciting and celebrated. It's not like a shameful thing. It's great to be a Robin.
100%. I love that idea of having more Robin stories of the world, because I think they are the ones that keep the world going, actually, is the the Batmans will give up. You know, and you mentioned Jeff Bezos, but I also look at the Bill and Melinda Gates story too. I mean, Melinda was working at Microsoft when they met there. She was very successful, very smart, and gave up her career to be able to create that stable place and environment for her family. And to me, when you look at these people's success, I don't think you could have one without the other. And I hope that as we move forward, we continue to celebrate, as you mentioned, the Robins of the world, whether they're male or female, right? Whatever standpoint they're on, because everyone has one if they are successful. Do you have any tips? You've mentioned that you've been a Robin for other people. And I think one of the things about, you know, running communities is you can be that support in person for others. What tips do you have for people? How do you be that Robin of the world for someone else?
You know, I've been a Robin in some of my romantic relationships with like helping my partners get their businesses off the ground or helping them kind of reshape their products. I was always very good with technology, so I'd build them websites and run their marketing campaigns and SEO. And for me, I thought, you know, I really thought that everybody did that. You know, I was like, I made an assumption that everyone's partner gets heavily involved in the other person's business because you genuinely are invested in each other's success. But that's actually not true, and that's actually more of a rare story. I realized like I was a good Robin, and one day my peers at work encouraged me that I could probably start my own company. So I left a startup and started Asterisk, which was an e-commerce company, and then later my AI company, Deep Farm. So, you know, I think being a Robin helps you realize you can also become a Batman, and then you can also switch to being a Robin. You know, with Woman of AI, I wanted to use my success to elevate other women, whether it's connecting them through events or through, you know, we get in-kind resources like free conference tickets to AI and cloud-related conferences that are usually several thousand dollars. And, you know, connecting and supporting women in the field has been really fulfilling for me. I always said, like, I would go to my corporate day job and it would kind of poison me a little bit from the stress and just it always being about making results and money. And then I'd go home and I'd work on my nonprofit and be with my family, and it would clean the poison out of my body. And then I'd go do the whole cycle again. But I wouldn't be motivated to do good for others if I also didn't have some pain that was driving that.
Yeah, thank you for calling that out, because I think all of us know that in some regards, life is suffering, right? A very Buddhist way of looking at things. But we're also looking to get rid of it and remove it quickly from our lives. And I like your approach, which is I can see how that fueled me for the cleansing, right? The good, to be able to take where my hurt was and to focus that into a different area. And I think it's a really beautiful way of looking at life, because it removes you from this victim standpoint to this empowered, right? Of, okay, this happened to me, but just because it happened to me now means that I have inspiration to take action and do something different. And so I think it just speaks to the volume of your character, but more importantly, is something that we each can learn from whatever that hardship is going on in our life right now.
You know, a lot of people say, I think, I'm not sure if Tony Robbins, you know, coined this term or he heard it and has made it famous and, you know, part of his business, but, you know, you can either have a breakdown or a breakthrough, and that, you know, when you can look at trauma, you can see it as something that's going to always cause you pain, or it's going to be the reason why you are strong today. So for me, a lot of my healing has been realizing, you know, there's been so much horrible neglect and abuse and violence and just illegal things that had happened in my life. But, you know, for many years I was haunted by those, but now I realize those made me become the incredible person I am today. You know, I'm well educated on so many different topics. I'm the healthiest I've ever been. I'm the financially the most stable I've ever been. And I actually feel like I can go to bed with peace, and I have the most cleanest, least toxic lifestyle I've ever had. But I wouldn't have been like this naturally because I wasn't raised like that. So I probably would have continued on my own path. So, you know, you have to have a couple of midlife or early breakdowns to change. And some people also, you know, collapse when those happen. So, you know, my recommendations for anybody that hears this, that if you believe things will get better, they generally do. And I've always been like a definitive optimist, which is, I believe genuinely in my spirit and soul that I'm a good person and that I want good things to happen in the world, and that I hope the world sends me that energy and I send it back. And that's what kind of wakes me up and puts me to bed every night.
I was going to ask you, how do you get through those tough moments or those midlife crisis? And I know it sounds simple, but having that positive outlook and keeping that hope of that things are going to get better and good things are coming to me and I'm a good person has allowed you to keep going, which is really inspiring.
Change in like consciousness, I think it happens at a few levels. So one was for me identifying like what genuinely makes me happy. You know, it's called the inner child, which is, you know, what genuinely makes me happy and what do I want to do? Even if other people have shame or fear around that. One was, you know, I really wanted to change my lifestyle, which was I wanted to live in somewhere sunnier. So I always lived in kind of the Pacific Northwest or the Bay Area, which kind of has this fog. It's kind of like people's moods out there. They're kind of like gloomy. So I decided to move to LA and I didn't know anybody there. And I put a ton of money into moving. And then the second was, you know, I really wanted to have more women in my life to balance more feminine energy. So that was part of my move to LA. And then also, you know, I wanted to be close to, you know, the tech area for my career still in case I need to travel or I want to do stuff for my nonprofit. And I like still being involved in the tech world. So, and then, you know, a lot of change is also on the unconscious layer. So, you know, I've been lucky to actually work with a lot of healers, whether they're doctors or naturopaths or shamans. And they have found me sometimes I would seek them out and then sometimes I would talk to people and then they'd like find me. And I think the more you talk about what's going on in your life, you start attracting that energy. But if you keep it silent all the time, no one's going to really know. So I would always talk about, you know, how I was developing fibromyalgia in my back and I would have chronic anxiety and I mean, I would basically vape like every single night just to go to bed. And I would drink like 3 cups of coffee. And it was like anytime I went on a date or I went to dinner, I'd have to have like 2 gin and tonics. And I was like, this is like not sustainable. And, you know, I got to work with a lot of healers that I think kind of healed me psychologically, spiritually, and physically that I think helped me change the wiring of my life because, you know, sometimes people self-sabotage, which is they know they want to do something, but they keep holding themselves back. And I think a lot of that is unconscious trauma. So I've been able to work with a lot of people that healed that unconscious trauma and helped me realize that I'm whole and that that trauma was actually something that helped me become stronger.
It takes a lot of bravery to be able to, I think, speak up and share what you're really feeling or going through, particularly too when you don't have enough experience to know, as you said, like, what you share and speak up, you'll start to attract that right thing to come in and to heal you. How do you find the courage to be able to speak up and talk openly and even just here on the podcast, share your story and, you know, where you were at and some of the things that you've been through? How do you get started going down that path? Or was this something innate to you?
Honestly, it was probably both. You know, I've always been really motivated and as a go-getter since I was younger. I was a lot different from my siblings. So I think I innately was always trying to push and change myself. And the second was just a survival instinct. Like I was going to die on my own. You know, I didn't have the support of my family. I was unmarried. I didn't have the financial resources. Like, I was going to hit rock bottom and I was like, either I hit rock bottom and die or I make a change. And, you know, I realized if I kept sabotaging myself, you know, people are successful in teams, even if it's at work. So I was like, I need to find a team of people in my personal life. those people helped heal me and I helped heal them. And I think that's where you become a lot more, you know, open and confident and different. So, you know, I think everybody would be different. So I really say, you know, if you at least feel like a little urge at the bottom of your heart that you want things to change, I think that itself, you channel into that feeling, is the right instinct. And then seeking out the right people and resources. And a lot of the people, you know, they were my friends or they were people that did work fully pro bono for me. I told them I didn't have the money to do it or I didn't have the money for this healing. And a lot of people in my early years of my healing, they actually did things. So I say, if you need support and you can't afford it, you should tell people. And there's people that have an abundance of things and they are happy to give when they can't receive, with the wish that one day when you're abundant, you can give without receiving. And that's what I really believe in.
And that's beautiful too. I mean, there's receiving healing, but then when you receive it as a gift too, I think also just makes it so much more powerful, and this confidence and faith in that everything's going to be okay. And it's like, yes, I can trust that I'm on the right path and on the right journey. If you could go back to your younger self, what would be one thing you would tell your younger self?
I'd probably say, like, I would have told her, you know, things are going to get better. There were so many, I've spent so many of my years, probably like 10, 15 years, I think, just being depressed and sad all the time. And I wish, you know, mental health was more, you know, spread out in terms of knowledge sharing back then. And I wish, you know, I wish there were forums at school or at camps or like after school clubs for kids to talk about their mental health, and just not because they're sick, but just to be able to express their feelings where maybe they can't express them at home or in the classroom. So I feel like so many of my childhood years in school was just like the worst time of my life. And I was like, wait, if being young is supposed to be the best time of your life, I was like, then being adult's going to be worse. And I was like, I would like draw these graphs and I'm like, here's like the point of my life. And I was like, it's supposed to get worse and worse. And I was like, at what point is it going to get so worse that it's just going to like end? And I would like draw these predictions all the time. And it was very hard for me to believe that things would get better. But, you know, for me, I was naturally like an intellect, because there's people that are good at like sports and kinesthetics skills. There's people that are really good like verbally and politically influenced. I was like, my thing is I'm a nerd and I can learn any subject and get straight A's and everything, take any test. And I was like, I'm this kind of like polymath. So for me, my source of power as a child and protection was knowledge. So being top of my class, getting the best scores, going to the best schools, was my way of just continuing without giving up. So I really had to anchor into my hobby, which was knowledge at the time. And that was something that my parents didn't actually impose too heavily on me. Because my siblings didn't, you know, they weren't as nerdy as me. But it was really just something that I did for survival. But ultimately, when I became older in life, I kind of transferred my value as in knowledge into career. So I put all my self-esteem and value into what I did for my work. Because, you know, I was like, if you prepare for school only to get a job, then like that value transferred. And it was probably until, you know, I started working in Apple and like a big corporate company, where I realized, you know, so many of my peers there, like their dream was working at Apple. It was like their lifetime dream and their peak success. And for me, it was just like a stop. It was just like a gas stop. It was like, for me, this is just a stop. I was like, this company's so big that it's hard to make a huge difference as an individual. And they've already been so successful. You know, like to work at Apple in the 90s would have been different. So for me, I really started to make the job not just my identity, but really just a job there.
And what advice would you give to women in AI, particularly at this pivotal time in this space?
So, you know, AI is so big right now, and there's like so many companies like NVIDIA that are just popping in their stock. And, you know, I always say, like, go into AI because if you want to do AI now because it's so saturated, do it because you love it and you're really, really smart and you're good at it. Because if you love it and you can't handle the technical and intellectual rigor because you are literally building a form of intelligence, you will quickly hit burnout. If you were somebody like me that like thrives on that intellectual complexity, Do it because you love it and not because it's going to make money. Because I honestly think AI's wave, most of the wave to make a lot of money in salaries and stock, it was earlier on. Now, unless you're an executive at a big company, those kind of have, they've kind of whatever you call it, they've kind of standardized them more. And AI is basically similar to like software engineering, and it's not as hyper hyped because there's been so many disappointments with hiring such expensive AI people only to not deliver the value that the company's expecting. So there's so much ways to outsource and get software and such that AI teams are pretty lean and they're pretty competitive to get into. So if you want to work in AI now, you have to really love it and you have to be very good at it, and it's truly like a heart passion. But otherwise, I do think AI is really big now. It's kind of like once mobile came and like the app store started thriving. Like the app store is pretty thriving now. I think there's other forms of technologies and other industries that are coming in the next 5 to 10 years that are probably worth riding the wave that I'm, doing research and getting involved in right now. I'm trying to find like the next AI wave, which is not going to be like another AI because that's AI is already out there.
Yeah. And so any ideas on what the next AI wave might be?
I really like to, my few guesses are like, I like to think about what like the future generations are going to want. So kind of like the gen, I guess, what are they called? X, Y, or Z? Or the, all of them? I don't know. I don't know if the order is like X, Y, Z or, yeah. So I just know there's like these young people that have only grown up with technology. They have money to spend on app stores. They have a lot of autonomy from their parents, which are millennials. And they are having more conscious upbringing. So I think young people are going to want healthier food options, more sustainable housing, sustainable energy. I think toxicity and inflammation is going to be something that they are going to care a lot about because their bodies will have been a lot more overloaded on that stuff since they were younger. And I also think, diversity and inclusion and different ways of like financing and funding. I mean, Bitcoin is literally the way it is because individuals were like, we want to create a decentralized coin system. They use no bank, they literally created it from scratch, and its value is so high because it's a reflection of how many people believe in it. And I'm finally like into Bitcoin, and like for years I remember it was like a couple thousand dollars. I was like, this is so ridiculous. I thought all my Silicon Valley friends, I was like, you guys are just like gambling, you guys are just like crazy. And then I remember in my apartment building, my doorman asked me if I invested in Bitcoin. And I was like, if my doorman is investing in Bitcoin and he's involved, it means the general mass population is going to be in this, right? And I was wrong to not invest in Bitcoin several years ago. So yeah, I really think the younger generations are going to want. I mean, even think about the food movement. There's so many healthy food snacks now. There used to not be vegan snacks or dairy and gluten-free. Like there's grain-free dog food. Like people are becoming more conscious of what they want. It would be great to see more sustainable even forms of technology since AI is so computationally and electrically expensive. Like if you look at the stocks and success of like cooling technologies for data centers, they're doing extraordinarily well because they're supplemental to AI. If you could find a way to do something that's more renewable in terms of energy, I think that will be highly valuable.
I agree. Well, definitely some fun things to stay on the lookout for. And I'm excited to see which next wave you ride and which one you decide to pick. I think it's going to be hopefully a more conscientious future that we all have where we take the time to go inward and investigate and make choices that are the right choices for ourselves and for those around us. So, Erica, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us. And most importantly, thank you for just your openness and sharing your story and all the wonderful work that you have been doing in this space. It's just so nice to meet like-minded people out there.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sadie, for having me. And to the audience that's listening, my wish is health and happiness your way, and to keep spreading love and light. And if you believe things will get better, they will. So I hate that like term, like law of attraction, but I really believe it now. I'm like, good energy brings good energy. So finding your authentic self, finding ways to be happy. I really think the younger generations are really good at expressing what they want. But then having companies build that and deliver that is, I think, is a huge, huge business opportunity. So I'm really excited to see what the future holds.
I love it. What a great way to wrap this up. And again, to all of our listeners, remember to stay curious and keep learning. And we'll catch you next time on the Data Bytes podcast. Bye-bye, everybody. If you are enjoying the conversations you are hearing today, we encourage you to continue to be a part of the conversation and join a community of like-minded, extraordinary women. With our free community membership, you're stepping into a realm where learning, networking, and growth are at the heart and soul of what we do. Connect with Women in Data's global community and network with our chapters all for free. But why stop there? Upgrade your membership with a special offer for Data Bytes listeners by getting $20 off a pro membership, in which you'll receive access to over 300 classes, leadership training, and exclusive events. If you're interested in mentorship and networking, we've got you. From monthly thought leadership webinars to exclusive networking events and a diverse on-demand mentorship program, the connections you'll make here are boundless. Join us and be part of a vibrant network. Dive into our book clubs, growth groups, and industry-focused gatherings. Women in Data is not just a community. It's a movement, a place where innovators, changemakers, and leaders come together to shape the future. Visit womenindata.org to join or use the special discount code in the show notes. Together, let's drive change one data byte at a time.